Okay, everybody. Looks like the Wi-Fi is coming back, so I suspect things will be back up and running momentarily.
And in fact, looks like I'm getting back into Adobe Connect, so if you haven't tried to get back in, please do so. So my understanding is we're waiting for the bridge to be reestablished for the remote participants.
Okay, so we're back up and running. Sorry about this. Technical difficulties do occur. Lisa, if you want to pick up where you left off, or... Yeah?
All right, and the recording is started again?
Yeah.
All right. So I was asked to restart at the beginning of this slide. I apologize. Be a little repetitive, but I'll do it a little bit faster this time. As you all know, the process framework defines three phases. We are at the very beginning of phase one. The phased approach was based on a common software development or product development lifecycle of establishing requirements before you begin functional design and then before you begin implementation, in which our case, functional design equates to policy. And the actual implementation step equates to developing implementation guidance or coexistence guidance. I'd call your attention to the pre-working group steps that were noted here. One of the things that this GNSO board group did was look very closely at available inputs, pull together many of those, which are now on this working group's wiki, and we can add to them, as we've already seen people are beginning to suggest some data production documents, for example, that might not have been identified previously that could be pulled in. And that's intended to be a living library. But another thing that the board GNSO group that looked at this did is it took some time to think about, are there additional inputs that we need to develop in advance of starting the working group? Do we need to do cost analysis? Do we need to do more legal analysis? Do we need to actually do a risk assessment in advance of the working group starting? And what different members actually concluded after going out and looking at those various questions, in some detail in some cases, was that it was too early, that what this working group does will affect how those assessments or analyses will be performed, and that those should be part of the process. And that's why you see cost being looked at in every single phase. That's why you see legal analysis or privacy being looked at in every single phase, and of course, risks as well. I'm no longer a presenter. Please advance. All right, so what were the questions that were identified in the framework? Well, they're the 11 questions that we've been talking about in our work plan. They're the 11 questions that you see in this working group's charter. Those questions were placed into the process framework in an order, particularly for phase two and phase three, an order that reflected what that board and GNSO council group felt might be interdependencies that could be satisfied once this working group gets to the point where work is possibly split up into parallel subteams. However, one of the things that the process framework does suggest is that during phase one, we consider all of these questions sort of very iteratively and closely as we all get on the same page about what these questions mean and what the requirements are for any registration directory service, be that a brand new one that might be recommended by that group, or be that today's Whois system. When I say Whois system, I mean the protocol, the systems behind it, the data behind it, everything. The output of this working group can potentially modify today's system as a consensus recommendation. Now, putting aside the specific questions for the moment, because I know we're going to discuss them in the context of our working group's work plan, I just want to call your attention to the notation at the bottom of this slide, the sequencing. So if you look at the charts that are in the charter and in the issue report that the charter was drawn from, you'll see a notation of letters A through H. And if you look at the actual diagram, you'll see how topics were sequenced using those letters. Oh, I also should mention and really emphasize that the charter calls these out, these 11 questions out, as the minimum set for this working group to address. That's not to exclude additional questions that might come up. If this working group decides that there's a topic that needs to be addressed that doesn't fit within those 11 questions, that's certainly on the table. That's certainly in play. But this is the starting point for this work group. And then I'll stop here with the diagram and just point out to you that when Chuck drafted the work plan with the help of the leadership team, for ease of reference, questions were numbered 1 through 5 and then 6 through 11. Those questions came from this chart, and they were numbered in the order that they appeared on this chart. We can have a discussion within this working group about whether that's the appropriate order in which to address those questions. But that's really where the order came from, where the numbers came from, and how to map it back into the chart that you see in this charter. Chuck?
Thank you very much, Lisa. And this is Chuck speaking. Keep in mind that we're showing this today so that everyone, if you haven't had a chance to look at the framework or the issues report, or maybe in some cases not even the charter, you get a foundation of where it all came from. And all I would like to suggest is that in other words, there's been quite a few people that have put a lot of time in suggesting this. Now, do we have to follow it exactly as presented? No. All I would ask is, let's realize that there are some reasons they did the thing, and let's at least examine them carefully and respect that. Doesn't mean we can't make some changes, but this is where it came from. Now, with that said, we'll open it up for Q&A for the members, if you have any. But keep it at a relatively high level. We're going to dig into some of these things, like the specific questions and so forth, later when we start looking at the work plan, and actually when we fulfill the work plan. But are there any questions or comments right now before we go to the next agenda item? Kathy? Okay. Again, try to use Adobe Connect to raise your hand if you can, but if I see you and it's not a big problem, okay?
So do I understand phase two and phase three, if I heard what Lisa said correctly, phase two and phase three, the drafters thought the order that they gave the materials in was more important. In phase one, it's a little more interrelated and kind of a sense that reordering might be okay.
Yes, I think that's correct. Now, there's not insignificance. If you read the issues report and the framework and so forth, I think the framework, and I'll let the two members of the framework team talk about this a little bit more, I think there is some significance to the order, but we certainly don't have to be rigid about that. That's why we've already started what I thought was a very healthy discussion on the list in the last week about the order of the first five. Now, notice that our mind map divides the 11 questions into two groups. The first five, as Lisa showed, and the next six. Okay, now there probably is some reasonable significance there. Not perfect, but reasonable significance in that the first five appear to really feed directly in that question we have to answer. Is a new registration data system needed? Or can we modify the existing one in some ways? And then what we decide there affects how we deal with questions 6 through 11. But did that answer your question? Okay.
If I could just add in response.
Remember to share your name.
I apologize. Lisa Pfeiffer for the record. I should know better. Kathy, you're right that group did feel very, very strongly that order was probably going to come into play when work split out. If it does indeed split out during phase two and three, maybe this group will choose not to do that. But if it does, that there would be very careful management of interdependencies. But in addition, the group also suggested that phase 1B work simultaneously, which was never really quite the right word, but the idea meaning that it had to be, phase one had to be very fluid because of the interdependencies and really bringing everybody onto the same page. The process framework also suggests that this working group continue to work as a big group as opposed to splitting up into sub-teams during phase one as part of trying to bring us to a shared understanding, maybe not agreement, but at least shared understanding.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy, for the very good question, and thanks, Lisa. And I, in the last 24 hours, responded to Lisa when I reread that. I'd read it before. When they said work on all 11 of those simultaneously, I said, sure. How do you work on 11 things simultaneously? That said, a key word is iterative that you've heard a couple times today. We're probably, whatever order we decide to proceed with, we're going to find ourselves probably moving down our lists and then, oh, we need to go back to this one. And that not only applies to phase one, but that will probably apply even when we get into the policy development. Ah, we discovered this. We may need to go back to that requirement and relook at it. So keep that in mind. When we finish with whatever we decide to be the first question to deliberate on in developing requirements, and we move on, we're quite likely going to maybe have to move back to that later, and that's okay. Okay. Any other questions? Did I see a hand over here? Or no. Okay. Okay, I see a hand up. Aiden.
Hi, yes. Thanks, Aiden Ferdinand, for the record. I just had one question regarding phase one. Who will determine when we can or must move to the next phase? How will we know when we've reached there? And also, what oversight is there that might limit us in our ability to put forward recommendations for these policy requirements?
Okay, and I'm sure you've already looked at the charter. But you'll see, look at it again, because there's so much in there, okay? I understand, because I've had to go through this thing, and I have to go back and look, too. But at the end of phase one, we make some recommendations. We, the working group, make some recommendations for which we have reached reasonable consensus on, okay? And we present those to the GNSO Council. And the charter, and I won't go into all the details of that now, but the charter then tasks the council with asking themselves some questions and see did they do it right? Did they, I'm not using the words of the charter, but do we have more questions that we want to take back to the working group? And then that's a gating point right there. Phase two and three don't start, and it's possible that phase two and three could kind of be going on simultaneously. That's in the documents as well. But that won't happen until the GNSO Council okays that. And they could come back to us first and say, what about this? How'd you cover this? Did you discuss this? And if not, we may have to spend a little more time. Does that answer the question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Excellent question. Any other questions? Okay. Let me look at, oh, I got it. Okay. You can put your hand down now. And by the way, don't feel bad if you have to be asked to take your hand down. Those of us who have been in lots of working groups have had that happen to us dozens and dozens of times. And you'll see me do it as well. Okay. Oh, okay. Volker?
Hello, Volker Greimann speaking, and this may be way ahead of my time, but something I noticed was potentially missing from the how page was, i.e. phase three, was introducing a mechanism to amend or easily change some of the specifications without having to launch it to a full FPDP. For example, if we decide on the users that have access and at some point community realizes that we have forgotten someone or included someone who shouldn't be there, then we might want to have to modify the existing users list without having to launch into a full PDP. So I would suggest that at that stage we also look at mechanisms to change some of the recommendations or some of the mechanisms that we have decided upon. Because I think the incentive to leave this alone once this is done, this is, after all, a significant piece of work, will be very strong, and reopening the entire package might be not really everybody's first keen interest, but there still might be need to revise aspects of it after it has played out for a couple of years.
So, Lisa, you want to speak to that?
I do, and actually that's a great question, but it's great for many reasons, one of which is it shows exactly what was meant by requirements on the next generation or any registration data system directory service. That's a possible requirement, that it be extensible, that there be a process in place to introduce new purposes or users, whatever this group might be. But that's exactly what this phase process was going after when it said requirements first.
Thanks, Lisa, and thanks, Volker. And Volker, I want to clarify one thing, and I'm pretty sure you understand this, but I want to make sure everybody does. This is a full PDP. We're a part of a PDP. So any ultimate recommendations that we submit forward that are approved by the GNSO Council and ultimately by the board would be requirements that registries and registrars would be required to implement. And, of course, there would have to be an implementation phase and so forth. So this is a PDP. We do, for those that don't know, the GNSO has working groups that aren't PDPs. And those still are valuable, but they don't have that contractual implication for registries and registrars that consensus policies from a PDP have. Any others before we, any other questions or comments before we move on? Is that a new hand, Lisa?
Stephanie. Okay.
Stephanie?
Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I'm not sure whether this is the right time to raise this issue, Chuck, but I'll just throw it on the table. When you look at the work plan and the scope of this organization, one of the problems is the subsequent implications for the 2013 RAA if we determine that we're collecting too much data. So I just wanted clarification that, A, there's a clause in the 2013 RAA that says this can be changed if there is subsequent PDP policy development that changes it, and just maybe clarify for the group what that would entail in terms of a change to the 2013 RAA.
Thanks. That's an excellent question. Again, if we recommend some consensus policies and they're approved by the board as the last step, then if that results in a change to the RAA, that change will be made. Okay, and I know that very well because I'm associated with one of those contracted parties.
Thanks, that's great.
And by the way, Chuck again, I want to clarify too that we'll probably be looking at issues related to the RAA as we start doing our deliberation on some of the questions. Okay. Go ahead,
Michele, for the record. Just around this thing around consensus policy on the contracts, I'm not sure how that would work if you were to change something that's explicitly specified in the contract. I'm not saying it wouldn't, but how do you do that? That's just a genuine question, but I actually don't know.
Thanks, Michaela. Well, that wouldn't be our task. If we have a consensus recommendation that's approved, as part of implementation, any contractual changes that would be needed would be made in that regard, and that would be part of the implementation process. Are you worried about all those hard negotiations you did and this group overturning those?
Short answer, yes. I mean, I don't know. I suppose what the question for me is, okay, you know, consensus policy, I mean, the contract's made up of two parts, the written contract plus all of ICANN consensus policy. That bit I get. The bit that I suppose your comment has raised, and maybe I'm overthinking this, which is quite possible, or maybe I've misunderstood it, also very possible, is that if there is wording in the contract that states registrar is obliged to do X or Y or Z or whatever, and we come up with consensus policy here that contradicts that, then is that something that can be dealt with via some kind of, I have no idea what the hell you call this, I'm not a lawyer, some kind of side document to the contract, or are you talking about making fundamental changes to the contract, which you can't actually do because the only way to open up the contract for negotiations is if the chair of the registrar stakeholder group agrees to it.
And I'm gonna, Greg's had his hand up and Marika wants to respond too, but before that, you know as well as I do, because we're both associated with contracted parties, that we have a requirement in there in our agreements that say we have to abide by consensus policies. Now, those consensus policies have to follow a specified procedure, and that's a procedure we're using in this working group. So if there are areas that end up in conflict like that, hopefully, first of all, we'll focus on those as we're stating requirements and try and deal with those so that when it comes time for implementation, that won't be such a hard process. But should I let you want to go, Marika, and then I'm going to come to you, Greg, okay?
Yeah, this is Marika, and I think you said most of it. Just to add to it, and I think we've seen it already with other consensus policies, indeed, where there is a conflict, the consensus policy trumps and then forces changes on the contract to make it in line with the consensus policy. I think that we had the same situation, I think, with post-expiration, where we then also had to, I think some of the provisions were no longer in line with the actual contract, in line with the consensus policy. And I don't know exactly how they did that, if it was changing the contract or it's like the consensus policy basically says, you know, section 5.3 now reads as this. I don't remember that exactly, but it is something indeed that's looked at. But the consensus policy trumps what is in the agreement.
Thanks, Marika. Greg. Steve.
Thank you. Greg Shatton for the record. I assume first that any change in consensus policy would have to be something that's within the remit of this PDP working group. So it's not that we can kind of discover something magical about some section that has nothing to do with next generation RDS and then somehow make changes to the agreement for that reason. For instance, you know, we might discover something that, you know, informs some interesting fact about some other part. That's outside the remit of this PDP. Our PDP is only related to next-gen RDS, so whatever changes to consensus policy make, we have to stay on that road. We're not just, you know, well, open to kind of unilaterally changing the contract just because it says that a PDP can change and consensus policy can change a contract. Maybe that's self-evident, but it seemed to me that, you know, it's the end result of this. It's only what the end result of this PDP process is intended to be, not some, you know, broad license to change consensus policy or to change the contract.
Thank you, Greg. Can I get you to come over to the registry stakeholder group? That was a good statement for us. But the charter defines our task, and we're limited to that unless we request a change to the charter from the GNSO Council. Steve.
Thank you. Steve Metallitz. I think in response to Michele's original question, it's definitely an implementation issue. And the reason I say that is just to give an example that I know Chuck will be familiar with. 2 years, 1 month, and 2 days ago, the ICANN board approved a consensus policy that would require Chuck's company as a registry to move to a thick whois structure. Now, 2 years, 1 month, and 2 days later, Chuck's contract hasn't changed yet. I mean, that VeriSign's contract hasn't changed yet because that change in consensus policy has not been implemented yet. So I'm hope and trust that before this decade is out, we will see implementation of that consensus policy, and I have to assume that will also include some adjustment to the VeriSign contract. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Stephanie.
I think Holly's ahead of me. Okay.
I thought.
Thanks. I didn't put my hand up because I thought we were using the computer. I'm a little bit alarmed by what I hear because I'm thinking that people are worrying about the extent of what the charter allows. Now, if the charter actually, in the questions, are saying things like, what data do we collect, how do we use it, and thus forth, that's very large. And that was, I think those questions are absolutely deliberate. So I would hate to think that we are going to hem ourselves in by not asking those questions just because we're afraid of the consequences of dealing with those questions. So could we actually keep all of the questions up and open? Thank you.
Thanks, Holly. Let me make sure I understand what you're asking.
Oh, well, there are 11 questions, and those questions ask some fairly broad, raise some fairly broad issues. You know, what data is collected? How is it used? Who gets access to it? Those are all very large questions, and they were deliberately put there. Now, I'm hearing from both Steve and Greg that there are concerns that maybe that is going too far. I'm actually saying I think that quite deliberately those questions are raising a whole range of issues about what data is collected, how is it used, who gets access to it. Those questions are on the table, and they're going to have implications. Very clearly they're going to have implications. And they're going to be big implications, perhaps, depending on what we agree on. But if we start there and we start with an open mind as to let's actually look at the questions that are being asked and not prejudge whether or not they're going to have big implications for who does what with the data, how it's handled in a contractual sense. I mean, I don't think we should be asking those questions. I think we should actually deal with what the charter group said we should be dealing with and not confine ourselves by being too worried about the implications of the answers. I think the answers will have some implications, some serious implications about the way that data, what data is collected, how it's handled, who gets access to it. And let's actually answer those questions by a consensus policy.
Thanks. This is Chuck, and I don't disagree with you at all. In fact, that's correct. But I didn't hear Steve or Greg saying that. I think one of the, and maybe I heard wrongly, it is important for us to realize that what we're doing here has some important consequences. But we shouldn't shy away from making recommendations just because it's going to have consequences. And you're looking at someone who will be impacted by those consequences. Our job is to make the best recommendations we can. Now, one of the 11 questions across all three phases is implications, has to do with implications. So we're not supposed to ignore implications, but we shouldn't let that's not our motive for whether we deal with a question or not. Just because it makes Michaela's life harder is no reason for us not to consider a question.
I would have to disagree.
Stephanie, I think you're up next.
Yes, Stephanie Perrin for the record. And don't worry, Michaela, I have an annotated RAA agreement. You just have to sign it and get ICANN legal to accept it. I've made all the amendments for you according to data protection law. No, the reason I asked the question is I just wanted to make it crystal clear that as far as if you're looking at this from the data protection perspective, the 2013 RAA is the data collection instrument. And the purpose of collecting registrant data is the operative purpose from a data protection perspective. I realize that when we're looking at the who is, we're thinking about, okay, why do we have a who is? But we have to go further. Why do we collect the data in the first place? And then you're looking at secondary purposes, one of which is to provide access, public access, through an instrument known as who is, or whatever we're calling it now. So the scope is broad, and there will be impacts. But don't worry, Michele, we're here for you to help you rewrite that contract.
Thanks, Stephanie. Now, I have two more people in the queue that are old-timers, okay, and I'm going to give them their chance. But I'd like to, after them, I'm going to pause and encourage somebody that's new to comment or ask a question. So get ready if you're willing there. In the meantime, let me go to David.
So I realize this working group has probably of all working groups I've ever been involved in, the biggest set of homework reading, I guess. And I realize you may not all have read the 166-page expert working group report yet, though I encourage you to do so. You know we're going to make you by the end. You may as well get started. But first, do read the charter for these discussions. It is an unusual charter. It's not like most working group charters. It had this whole separate process. It constrains our it specifies our methodology a lot more than your average working group charter. And it's fairly clear on it is fairly clear on what our job is and where it extends. It's certainly true there are some little, you know, a few points where there's not so much gray areas, but some intricacies to exactly where remit goes. But it's intrinsic in the whole next generation RDS remit that we will change a lot of. We may change a lot of stuff for the old RDS, whatever, which is effectively who is. So there is a huge amount of consensus policy we may totally change, but we are quite we are, as Greg says, limited in what it is. I don't think a lot of these questions about what exactly can we do and can't we in practice will be reasonably clear from the charter if we sit down and talk about it. Nope, I'm getting a head shaking.
I just heard Chuck say we're not limited, and then I just heard you say we are limited. Could you two agree?
Okay, we are limited by the fact that we are creating a registry directory service. We are not, Greg says a policy that is not that. I recommend SAC 51, by the way, which is quite specific in telling you what is a registry directory service and isn't.
Okay, let me jump in here. This is Chuck. We're getting into the weeds a little bit more than we need to right now. We'll get there. We're going to have to deal with these issues, everybody. But if we don't do this in a very deliberative and managed way, we're going to jump all over the place and get ahead of ourselves, and it's going to take us even longer than it already will. So let me go ahead to Greg, and then we have someone who hasn't been in the queue yet today, I don't think, other than introducing herself. So, Greg, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. Greg Shatton again, just to respond to what's been said in part about what I said earlier. And I think David's on the right track. We're here to create a next-generation RDS. This is not a general go where the questions lead us kind of PDP. This is not a generalized data protection and privacy PDP. We're here to create a next generation RDS, not to make changes to who is as it stands. I know that people perhaps may want to widen the highway here, but I think we have a remit. It will make a major change when it's implemented by going to a whole new system. That's where we're going. We can get all the questions answered, but when it comes to the policy we develop, the policy we develop has to be within the charter and mission of this PDP, as much as there might be potentially other things one might learn from the same answers to those questions. You know, this is a PDP with a purpose. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. And rather than getting in a debate on this, I'm not seeing a lot of differences between what different people are saying. We have a huge task It's going to have all kinds of variables. It's going to involve all the things that everybody is concerned about. And we'll have differing points of view, but we're going to have to deal with most of these issues when we start answering the questions and coming up with requirements. So now, Stacy.
Hi, Stacy Walsh for the record. So my question kind of goes into this a bit, but basically I was wondering when the new RDAP system would be covered and discussed, if that would be in the system model requirements question, because is the technical side also bound to this consensus agreement as well, in terms of creating a compliance system? Policy and technical systems are mutually enabled and restricted by each other, and as I learned today, that the new RDAP system has the ability for tiered access but can't be implemented because it's a who is policy issue. So I was wondering where that fit in.
Thanks, Stacy. It's a really good question. So we're developing requirements in phase one. Policy will be developed in phase two, assuming that everything moves ahead, and implementation. And, of course, part of implementation is going to be how do we implement the policies that are developed. That will involve needing a protocol, assuming we go with a new system, okay? And we're fortunate at this stage in the who is world, if I can call it that, that we actually do have a protocol that possibly can meet most of the requirements we come up with. And so in policy, that's where we're really going to get into that and implementation of that policy. How do we do it? Will the GNSO come out with, we recommend the RDAP protocol be used to implement this? That's something we'll have to face later on. But we're fortunate because a lot of the who is work that's gone on and people like Steve and Kathy and Holly and Stephanie and David and so forth know that we've done a lot of policy work in the past. We've been talking about tiered access for years, but we didn't really have a way to do it. We do now, but we're going to get there a ways down the road, okay? And next we have Nick. Thanks, Stacy.
Thank you, Nick Shorey, for the record. I'm just looking at the question on data accuracy. What steps should be taken to improve accuracy? And kind of tied to some of the previous discussion around sort of what we developed succeeding previous policy. I'm mindful that there is still sort of ongoing work around the WHOIS verification accuracy specification review. When we say what steps should be taken to improve accuracy, is that are we sort of reopening that discussion around that the data meets the criteria for the box, or that the data is verified and certified that it is, whoever it is who they say they are. Just that question.
Thanks, Nick, and we're going to get there, okay? Because that's a question we have to answer, it's not something we can answer right now because we'll probably have to deliberate on that quite a bit and there's going to be different opinions. But we will get there. And you'll see that in the work plan. We're going to have to finalize the work plan and then we're going to jump right in, follow our work plan, and start going very systematically through all the questions. And deliberation on those will take quite a while, probably some more than others, but that will come. Go ahead.
So I'm just wondering sort of how this how we might get into an awkward situation where we've got two tracks at the same time doing the same, looking at the same issue.
With regard to parallel tracks, the charter suggests, as Lisa shared and in the framework that was developed, that we try to do most of the work in phase one as a whole working group. Now I don't think that totally prevents us from doing parallel tracks. I really suspect that what we'll end up doing is dealing with more than one question at the same time because they're so interdependent. But we'll deal with that when we refine the work plan. Lisa, go ahead.
Put my hand down.
Oh, okay. I didn't look back. Okay. All right. And Nick, I think that's an old hand. So we'll go to David.
Yeah, well, to Nick, I mean, there is no straight answer, but I mean, I think the leadership team, and I'm sure most of us generally, have no great enthusiasm for reinventing wheels that are being done elsewhere, where there is good work that's already been done. We'll grab that and use it as a starting point, but the context may end up being slightly different in which we look at that question. Things like tiered access do change the way we may look at some of those questions. So there is no straight answer as to whether it's a, you know, how we will deal with that question when it comes. I also just wanted to say to Stacey, for technical implementation, we do have this very obvious protocol waiting around that we could use, and that does give us some, you know, some fairly obvious answers to some questions that it might be asked. But it doesn't mean, just because we have it doesn't mean actually the technical implementations end there. There are issues like, the RDAP allows for different profiles and things like that. So there will still be some work there when we get down. But it's a long, long way down the road that we have to start looking at that sort of detail.
Thanks, David. And I think we have an online person now. Andrew, you're up. He's here. I thought I saw you saying you weren't coming.
I'm glad you're here. The IAB finished its meeting, so I showed up here. I'm Andrew Sullivan. And can I just maybe make a friendly amendment to the first question here? Because it seems to me that some of the discussion that I've seen on the list and the little bit that I've heard here, and apologies for being late, and also my reading of the EWG's final report suggests really that the who should have access to GTLD registration data could be restated as who and under what circumstances. And if you do that, then it makes it quite clear that the who is not an individual, but actually the who and the role that they're participating in. So you can have, for instance, questions implicit in there about differentiated access. And the problem historically is that we haven't actually had that conversation because there never was a possibility of differentiation. So by including that, explicitly from the get-go, we won't be continually tripping over the question of, well, are we going to do RDAP or not? That's, that to me is not a very interesting question. And I will just say, as a completely separate point and putting my geek hat on, if you think that the IETF is going to build you another Who Is protocol after having done it four times already, forget it.
Oh, come on, Andrew. Lisa, go ahead.
So Andrew actually has just found an error in my slide. That should say who should have access to GTLD registration data and why. The question is actually and why.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to Wanawit. Hope I didn't pronounce that incorrectly.
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Did I pronounce it close?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Very good one. Okay, Wanawit for the record. So we very interested. I think we participate in the PDP process, translation, transliteration before, and we like a kind of follow-ups, even though it's still not the issue that it might not relate it, but the data accuracies and the element of the data when come to the country that not using the ASCII, that what you normally call, that challenge that we as a government, we do see that whether it's a role of government to facilitate this to help registrar. Case of Thailand is quite unique that 75% of the users is using the international domain names, generic like .com, .net, only 25 using CCTLD. So, when it comes to this address translations, it's always a problem. And we study that how could we coming out and help, especially when you go for validation and verification in the futures, that we try to help in a way that how could the registrants is doing the verification, validation, and translation only once, and then can use for several registrar. We do not think that it is out of the scope in the beginning, that we did not think that whether it should translate or not, or what we thinking how could this information is shared amongst the registrar, that if I register 20 domains, I should do only once, and then the data can share, and that's the aspect that we try to have a look, and we coming out to participate here to see on the accuracy and elements, and that's what we're looking at. Thank you.
Thank you. And for those that don't know, I know I'm quite sure, you know, he's obviously aware, but there is a working group that's made some recommendations with regard to translation and transliteration of information in what we now know as WHOIS and what we call the registration data service in the future. So we're going to have to coordinate with those kind of things that are going on, and some of that work will help us in what we do. And then I think there was a, before I go to Peter, was there a hand over here on this side that doesn't have access to Adobe? Somebody? Okay. All right. So let's go to Peter.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Peter Kimpian, Council of Europe. I'm quite new in IAC, and this is my first PDP, so I'm very glad to be here, and I'm fascinated so far, so it's really good. But I'm not quite sure about the order of this question, so this is why I just wanted to give you my views also on that issue, is that I think the speaking about first about the purpose of the whole instrument would be key, in my opinion, because in my perception, every other questions we start with will result in this question, because we have to define first the purpose of the whole instrument. So if you allow me a very naive two examples. So if we want to use the data for the completion of a contract, the RDS, this is a completely different data set as opposed to if we want to create a public registry for internet user. So we have to define a purpose, and maybe in that we can have some clue how to achieve this.
Thank you. Now I want to clarify that we're going to get to that. Okay, let's not start talking about the order yet. We're going to do that when we get into the working plan. Okay. So I want you to keep, no, that's okay. That's okay. We're going to all do that. But it's going to be very important. There are people in the room, and you don't need to speak up now, okay, that have already disagreed with that. Okay, you probably saw it on the list. Okay, and you may have participated on the list. That's good. So we're going to get there. I'm going to cut the queue off after Stephanie, and then we're going to take a quick look.
One gentleman.
Oh, that's Marianne. I was calling for you a little bit earlier, and I guess I didn't get your attention. It was you. Okay, so maybe I'll let you jump in front of Stephanie. Okay.
This is Marianne for the record. You welcomed the newcomers to ask questions, so I will give it a try. I have the green label as a newcomer, so I hope that grants me a bit of protection for asking questions that might not be reasonable. On one of the previous slides, we saw a very detailed work plan that outlines our work for the long period. And my question is a bit procedural. The fact that we have a plan that is so detailed, does it mean that we implicitly agree that we would like to have a new protocol designed from scratch to replace the WHOIS? Because if I remember well, one of our goals in the first steps in our working group should be to analyze if we should make modifications of the WHOIS protocol versus creating a new protocol. And if yes, then will we have a similar plan for the first approach to have a WHOIS with some modifications? Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we're going to get to that question, okay? There are a lot of us, including myself, that have our answers to that question already, okay? And What we're going to do first, though, before we finalize our answer, is we're going to go through at least the first five question areas, and then we're going to come back again, and you quite likely might not change your position there. Others, we'll see. But that's why I want to walk through the whole work plan, and we're probably not going to have too much time today to start discussing details like order. But let's see where we go. Stephanie, you're last on this, and then we're going to go to the next agenda item.
Thanks very much, Chuck. Stephanie Perrin for the record, and I do apologize for starting to split hairs so early, but thank you, Lisa, for the amendment to that first question. Any chance we could get it back up on the screen? Because there is a difference between saying who should have access and why, and who should have access and for what purpose, particularly in the data protection context. So who should have access and why should they have access? In other words, what authorities do they have to get access and the purpose for getting access? I'd like to make that differentiation just in case we start muddying the waters. And these things, I know it's already complicated enough, but I do think the hair splitting has to be done now so that we don't go roaring off down a road. Thanks.
Thanks, Stephanie. Chuck speaking again. And remember what Lisa said. The charter gives us these 11 questions, but it said we can ask new questions. And so we can add to the questions. So we need to answer the questions because that's in our charter, but we can add questions to that, and we'll have that opportunity. All right, what I want to do now is go to, I think, agenda item 4, and if staff can put it, Marika, I think you're the one doing it, if you could put up the draft work plan. Now, all I'm going to do on this is I'm going to very quickly walk through the whole work plan. Now, hopefully some of you have already done that because you've had it a little while. And then after we walk through it, I'll open it up for questions. And because we're running out of time, if my fellow leaders up here don't object too strenuously, I'll open it up to observers at that time because we're running into the time we were going to allow observers to jump in if they wanted to. We don't have too many of these opportunities for a live meeting. So I'm going to try and walk through that very quickly. Keep the questions high level when we do that because, again, we're going to start going through that work plan item by item and try to come to a consensus in terms of how we will change it or leave it or whatever. Michaela, go ahead.
Now, just one other thing I just wanted to add very quickly is, you know, if anybody in the group, maybe not now, but maybe at some point further down the road as we get into more detailed aspects of WHOIS and data collection and there's a whole load of other things, it's quite a technical area. If some of you feel that you're having difficulty following some of the technical operational aspects of it, please do let us know. We've discussed running maybe some sessions to help people to get their heads around some of those more kind of technical aspects, which aren't entirely kind of pure policy. Because one of the gaps we've seen, based on past experience in WHOIS related activities, is there's often a misunderstanding and gap between things like, I don't know, the various fields on a WHOIS record, for example. Some of you speak fluent WHOIS, I know. Others of you may not. And how fluently you speak WHOIS is going to vary on how much experience you have. And that's okay. But in order for us to be able to move things forward in a constructive fashion, we need to make sure that people actually understand some of these things, some of the, you know, the different ways you can access records now, some of the different types of abuses. I mean, we can teach you how to abuse WHOIS. No, please, I shouldn't have said that for the record, should I? But no, jokes aside, I mean, we're more than happy to put time into that. Also as well, standing invitation, if anybody does have any questions, please do feel free to reach out to other people who've been around a bit longer. I mean, I'm happy to answer questions. Others are too. If you don't feel comfortable speaking to me, Chuck, or one of the other co-chairs, find somebody you think is warmer and fuzzier and nicer. I don't know. But, you know, don't be afraid to ask questions, because it'll make things go a lot more smoothly. Thanks.
Thanks, Michaela. And you can do that if you think it's something that's not the benefit the whole group. You can do that privately with Michaela or any of us on, or all of us on the leadership team, and we'll try and set something up that maybe the whole working group doesn't need, but we can do a separate session in that. Now, in front of you is the draft outline of a work plan. Notice at the bottom of the Adobe screen, you have the ability to control the readability of it. There's a percentage there. You can do plus or minus if it's too small for you to read, so please note that. Now, the first part, I'm not going to go through the first part with the assumptions. There's a bulleted list there. Those were part of the approach we already went over. You can look at them again. But I'm not going to take time to go through that. Instead, I'm going to jump right in to the outline of the plan itself. And so if you'll go down the bottom of page one, I think there, where it says draft work plan, whoever's controlling this, Marika, can you scroll down a little bit? Oh, yeah, take control back for now. As I do this overview, that would be very helpful. So you won't be able to control it for a minute, because as I do a quick overview. So you can see right there that we've already done step one, so I won't go over that. Step two, this is the small team of five people that volunteered to work on filling gaps of the working group. Then so that's step two, and you can look at those yourself if you can scroll down further, Marika. And you can see, we'll go to step three. We've already approved a weekly work plan schedule. Now, that doesn't mean we can't change it. If anybody doesn't know that, send a message to us. We'll tell you what that is. It's basically we're meeting at Tuesdays at a fixed time, except for the last meeting of the month, and we adjust that to accommodate a small number of the working group members who are in a region where they have a lot of bad meeting times. But it is a small number of people there. That's why we're doing it one meeting a month. And again, that can all be changed. Step four, this is an ongoing responsibility for all of us. I hit on this already, so I won't talk about it. There are a lot of documents to review, and we'll help guide you through the ones that are most pertinent. I already said the charter, the framework's a good one, the issues report are really good ones to review, and of course a big one to review is the EWG report, because we're starting there. I'm going to skip then to step five, review the rules of engagement from the charter. And we had targeted that for March 1st. We did that, didn't we? So we did that. So we haven't updated the table, but that's something we did in, I think, on March 1st. I didn't happen to be in that meeting, but I did listen to the recording. And then step six is to actually develop a work plan. That's what we started after the meeting last week, and what we're working on right now. There was pretty good agreement on the approach. Okay, not unanimous, but pretty good agreement on the approach. Now we're at tweaking the work plan so that we can all agree on it. Okay, it doesn't mean we're all going to get what we want in the work plan, but we're going to do that. Step seven, we're going to reach out, and this can kind of be done in parallel with working on the work plan. We're going to reach out to the SOs and ACs with a request for some initial feedback. We'll do that periodically through the working group meetings, and I won't go through the sub-steps there. Step eight, and this is a big one, develop initial possible requirements list starting from the questions posed by the charter. Okay? Now, this is before we start deliberation on the possible requirements. And notice I said possible requirements. You've heard me emphasize that before. Until we agree on them as a working group, they'll move beyond the possible thing then and be a recommendation. And so step eight is really important. So the leadership team already has a first draft of a list of possible requirements from the EWG report. But we're not stopping there. Understand that, please. Okay, so notice the subsequent steps. Here I'm going to go into more detail because it's important. 8B, you know, that draft will be sent to all of you, everybody in the working group. And we're going to want you to comment on that. Okay, you may say, I don't think that should be a requirement. Or you may say something, you may say, we're missing one. In fact, if you go on to 8D, we want to create a second draft of possible requirements based on the feedback from everyone. And then we go to 8E. So you're going to be asked to provide additional requirements that weren't identified from that. And then we're going to go to, again, we'll incorporate those to create a third draft. We're going to review that and so on. And we'll do the outreach number two to the SOs and ACs to have some feedback in terms of the possible requirements. And then we're getting way into the future in 11. Well, it's not too far into the future, but we need to decide how we're going to deliberate. How are we going to decide? How do we agree that something should be a requirement? And there's the charter provides some good information there. I won't go through all of 11 because we're so short on time. If you can scroll down to 12. Thanks, Marika. So the big part of our work is in step 12. Once we have this list of requirements, we're going to go deliberately through those and decide, okay, do we want to recommend this as a requirement? Now, we can come back and do that, you know, revisit it. We're not going to be rigid on that. And the way the charter is organized, excuse me, the work plan is organized right now is steps 1 through 5 are in that order, okay? We don't have to leave it that way, okay? We're going to talk about that. We won't get to it today. And then 13, we're going to have to decide, okay, depending on what we, there are some general requirements we're going to look at in 12G, and 12H is critical step. Do we think that after we've gone through step questions 1 through 5 in whatever order we decide, do we think a new RDS is needed or could the existing one be modified to cover it? Again, some of you already have answers on that. That's okay, but not everybody agrees. 13, so we'll adjust our work plan at that point, depending on what our answer is, to expand it to include questions 6 through 11. And then, if you can scroll down, and there will be another SOAC outreach, and then scrolling down, then ultimately, after we've done, expanded the work plan and dealt with questions 6 through 11, we'll do an initial report that will go out to the community for public comment. We'll take the public comment and prepare a final report. And that's where the GNSO Council gets involved with our final report. Now, I did that very quickly. We're going to go back starting in our next meeting, which I think is the 22nd, right? And we're going to start going through these from the beginning, especially the detailed part of step number 9, I think it was. So it's like that. Now, I did that quickly intentionally because I wanted everybody to see the whole picture, okay, without getting down to the nitty-gritty. Now, we only have, a little over 10 minutes in our time, but let me open it up for high-level questions, keeping in mind that we're going to go through this, the details, in our next meeting.
So I think you had Kay and then Holly. I don't know who Kay is. Okay, so the two of you are doing some kind of shuffling around of queue orders, so that means that you're ceding to Holly?
I'll be W next time.
Confuse us even more, why don't you?
I know. Probably just, it's just a question, but at 4A we've got review charter, including the process framework. Now, I think pretty much up front we've identified that we'd like to reorder questions 1 to 5. But then they're not really, I don't know how that relates to 12E, which is deliberate on question 4. I'm just a little puzzled by that.
Sorry, Holly, I missed that. I was distracted by something.
I know. to repeat, in question 4A, what's listed as review charter, including process framework. Now, I'm assuming that at that point we're going to look at the questions, the main questions we have, particularly the first 5, possibly reword or reorder them at that stage. It's just I would be concerned if we got all the way to 12 before we decided what order we're going to do the questions in. And I'm going on the numbers, that's all. This is the order, so it's just a question of at what stage do we look at at least the initial 5 questions and work through them before we come up with further discussion.
Yeah.
All right, this is Chuck. Okay, so we reviewed the framework today, right?
We did, and what you said at the time was, look, they're open for reframing, reordering. But we haven't done that. So are we going to do that fairly up front?
Well, if I'm understanding you, this is Chuck again.
Yep.
If I'm understanding correctly, we're not going to modify the framework. That's a done deal.
Oh, no, absolutely. And in the
But how we apply it to our work plan as we go through the step-by-step in the work plan, we may suggest a change from what the framework said.
Fine.
Okay, that makes sense? Okay, thanks. Kathy?
Kay has brought a problem.
Kay?
Okay, my name is now in there. Thank you to whoever typed that. Kathy Kleiman. Okay, there is a proposal on the table that would change this. The proposal is that before we look at all the secondary purposes to which people would like to put the registration data, that we actually, before we get that we actually move part of 12 into 4 and look at what data elements are we collecting. We don't save that till 12. We look at the data elements now. And we look at, and then the second proposal on the table is that we look at the privacy and data protection laws that may help us understand how we can construe that data for both primary purposes and for secondary purposes. Because jumping into the initial requirements list of the EWG is jumping into the secondary purposes of this registration data. And so by the time, it just seems the order. So we start with the initial requirements. We go on, we circulate it before we even get to what the data elements are and what structures, legal structures, may impose limits on our analysis and use.
Okay, I'm going to respond to you the same way I did over here. We need to have that discussion, and we will have that discussion when we start going through the work plan in detail. Okay, all I was trying to accomplish today is give you what it looks like now, and then we're going to very carefully look at the steps, and that's where I want you to bring that up again, and we will deal with that.
Thank you.
Greg, did you want to ask a question? Greg, you had your hand up. And
Greg Shatton, for the record, when Chuck said we'll get to that when we, next step of looking at the order at a later time, I'm more or less reserving my question, but I did want to say I don't think we have a single proposal on the table to reorder. We have a number of different potential proposals about reordering or not, so I think it's all an open question. So it's not like we're sitting here with an A, B that we're going to get to very soon. We have a potential number of possibilities, including no reordering, all of which are, and none of which are on the table currently. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck, again. And Kathy, we will debate your suggestion openly, okay? and try to come to some sort of agreement in the working group. Now, maybe a hard one. I don't know. But we will do that. Now, is there anybody that's an observer? Okay, I know. So is there anybody that's an observer that wants to comment or ask a question? If so, please come to the mic and go ahead. You take it from there.
It's got Wendy Seltzer on remote. Go ahead, Wendy. Sorry, I can't.
Not very remote, just far back. And
well, you were hiding from me.
And joined you late, for which I apologize for yet another conflicting meeting. But just noting the as we do the interdependence of the questions 1 through 5, it's very likely that we're going to end up spewing out a list of all of the possible data users and data uses and all of the possible ways in which information might be displayed and all of the possible steps that might be taken to improve privacy and then go back and find the interactions among them, such as some might be less necessary if other fields are removed entirely and other accuracy protections may be accuracy provisions may be needed only if particular fields are included. So I just noting that different language is used in each of the specific questions, I think I'm suggesting that we not read anything into the some of them saying what steps should be taken, what steps must be taken, what steps are needed, but rather sort of start with a breadth first and then narrowing search on the whole collection.
Thanks, Wendy. Chuck again. And remember, we have the ability to add new questions. So that's all doable, and we will do that as we deliberately go through it. Now, next week we're going to start talking details of this. And forgive me if I, holding off. Because of the huge task we have and the large working group, if we don't do this fairly systematically, we're going to have problems, okay? So when I push back a little bit and say, could you hold that a little bit, please be patient. We're going to give everybody a chance to make suggestions to this work plan, first of all, so that we can come up with a work plan that most of us support, okay? I saw a hand back here.
Yes, the gentleman down there on the left, and I can't see your name, and I'm hopeless. So please introduce yourself and speak. Go ahead, feel free to speak. No, there's a microphone on the table in front of you.
Erich Schweighofer, University of Vienna, with some research on data exchange between police authorities. And the big problem was the purpose limitation principle, because in all conventions, use of data by enforcement agents is very loosely, openly defined. And in particular, when you come to this kind of law enforcement agency worldwide, how do we consider that the data limitation principle is respected? I think that's an important consideration. And anyhow, thanks for introducing me to the work plan. As an outsider and an observer, it's highly complicated how I describe the issues. They're a bit different seen from the outside world.
Okay, thank you. I'm conscious now that we're almost out of time. We've got like 2 minutes left. Do we have any other questions from anybody in the room, regardless of their status? Lisa, you had a hand up. All right, there's a gentleman down the back. Please go ahead. Bring yourself up to a microphone and speak.
Okay. I'm Lanrui Ajayi, member of the WG. I just want to know at what time can we add additional questions? Do we do it now or at some point later? What time can we add more questions to the list of the questions we have?
Can you move closer to the mic because I really can't hear you.
I said at what time can we add more questions to the questions we already have? I can't see I can understand that from the plan we have here. When do we have a liberty to do that, to ask more questions?
Okay, please go ahead, Lisa.
And Landry, we've worked together a long time, so I understand you perhaps better. You want to know when the working group could add additional questions to the list of 11. So in Chuck's draft work plan, that would occur, I believe, during stage 12, where we deliberate on possible requirements and we decide, we have a requirement that doesn't fit into one of the 11 questions. This group could suggest an additional one be added and then work through.
Okay. Thank you.
It's good to see you, Lonnie.
Chuck, would you like to have the last word as our glorious leader?
Thanks. We'll see how glorious it is when we get a few months down the road, huh? Or when we finish phase one. But thank you very much for the participation today. Next meeting, we're going to really delve into the details of the work plan, and nothing's off the table, but we need to, as a working group, come together in terms of what it's going to be. That may be a little bit challenging, but we as a leadership team will try to facilitate that. And please familiarize yourself further with the details of the work plan before our next meeting. And if you haven't read the charter and some of these other documents, including the EWG report, please do that between now. Now, we're not going to have a meeting next week because we typically, I mean, I know everybody's just been relaxing and having fun this week. For those that don't know me, that was a facetious comment, because I have had, I lost count, I think this is my fifth very long day. So we know that we all need recovery period and travel time and so forth. So our next meeting is on the 22nd at our regular time. Stephanie?
Thanks, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. Just as you read the EWG report for the previous discussion on webinars that would be useful, just you might want to note the pieces in there, because it does get quite technical, and if you're not following, that's where we need the webinars. Now would be a good time to figure that out. Thanks.
Thanks, Stephanie. Any other final comments before I adjourn? Thanks very much. Have a good rest of the week and safe travel.